boy. Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast 3. I'm your host, Joseph Gordon. As always, ride with me is my home skillet, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS Inc. That's PACSINC. And PACS Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential. The focus on economics and education with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. Click on all those tabs, especially like I'm always telling you, click on that tab that says the code so you can learn more about the codes of conduct that PACS Inc. have created to help Black America work more as a cohesive, loving, united unit. Even though united unit is double, I said it anyway, who cares? So make sure you check out PACS Inc. I have a lot of educational information for the Black community. Make sure you like our Freedom Train Facebook page. Make sure you follow the Freedom Train on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow the Freedom Train on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes, Google Play, and now Stitcher. And I have Pat tell you more about this. Matter of fact, Pat, go ahead and tell them more about Stitcher. Tell them about Stitcher.
All right. Well, first off, it's economics and not integrity. I wasn't going to say nothing, but then I realized I would be out of character if I did not say anything. So.
That's true.
I don't let stuff slide. Now, moving forward. Next thing is, I was just about to rap before you decided.
No, you wasn't. No, you wasn't. Everybody know you wasn't. Everybody know you wasn't.
Everybody knows I'm the seventh letter of the alphabet. So.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Okay.
Now, next up, moving on into the show. Stitcher. It's a brand new app that, it's not a brand new app, but it's brand new for us. We have the Freedom Train Network now available on Stitcher. It is something that's available for both iTunes and Android, so you don't have to, you know, worry about what you have or what's available to you. If you want to just go to Stitcher, you can just go to Stitcher, type in Freedom Train Radio, and all the shows will come up. Also, if you are in a vehicle that has access to apps or access to certain other platforms, and I'm sure you know if your vehicle has access to Stitcher or not. But, again, if you have Stitcher in your vehicle, you can listen to the shows in your vehicle, Freedom Train, search bar. All three of the shows will come up. Lessons from the Screen will be added this coming week, and that's what it is.
Go down, it go down. We are expanding this network. We are growing. And remember, also, subscribe to our YouTube channel as well, the Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. We are out here doing our thing in this podcast world. So, like he said, remember, every Wednesday you get this Freedom Train podcast. Every Monday you get the Fix Sports podcast. Office hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tobin is moving to Wednesdays. So stay tuned so we can give you the exact time and everything. But they will be moving to Wednesdays. Lessons from the Screen. I said Lessons from the Stage last week. It's Lessons from the Screen. That's the name of Patrick's show.
You've been messing that up every week.
Hey, man, I'm getting it. I'm getting it. It's okay. Stage, because stages and screens go together, so, you know.
Yeah, you're right. But you've been saying stage for a while. I started to just change the name to Lessons from the Stage.
Because I be thinking about acting. But Lessons from the Screen comes out every Thursday right here on the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com, where you can catch us and all of our shows, as well as our upcoming show, Tea Time Black Women Talk. And we actually have two of the ladies from Tea Time Black Women Talk who's joining us on the show today to give you some information about their show and also to join our discussion. So we have Miss Tam and Miss Mo. How y'all doing today?
Good evening. Whoop, whoop.
Going down in the south.
Everybody got hashtags, right, on y'all show?
Hashtag.
We're working on our hashtag.
So what,
I think now is BlackBerry.
We know we got hashtag Mo knows.
So, yeah, Mo knows. Yep.
So, yeah, we can't give up that BlackBerry.
Mo knows is on the show, and BlackBerry is on the show.
Insider.
The BlackBerry thing, because I think we can get the. What's the BlackBerry thing?
We gonna say the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. But you know that jumps into colorism. But anyways, I still have a BlackBerry. So
BlackBerry. I'm glad you laughed.
Still sell them, everybody.
What'd you say, Mo?
Who knew?
I said they still sell those BlackBerry phones, and Tammy still is buying them.
Hey, man, I need keys.
It's only three in here. It's only three out there, and they keep recycling in the Tammy. They fix it up and just blow on it. Send it back to her. Yeah, that's why they keep messing up.
Hey, man. Look, that ain't what you got us on for. We're going to, excuse me, let me be.
Give them a synopsis of y'all's show. Tell me about y'all's show.
Wait. So what, explain to the people the hashtag Mo Knows, Mo.
So Mo Knows started, man, I don't know how long I've been using that hashtag, but as I started to develop in information and ciphering through the internet, memes, all that kind of jazz, I would just hashtag it Mo Knows so people knew that unique perspective that was coming from me. Of course, my nickname for the most part is Mo. And I have a little bit of knowledge I've been blessed with. So if you hit that hashtag Mo Knows, you will get some of that little bit of knowledge I'm willing to, you know, I'm able to share. Blessed, humbled.
Gotcha.
That's
and
the queen over there.
And what are the other
two hashtags? I don't think we've gotten there yet. I know EB was working. I think she's E Breezy. But, and then we got Mia X. We were configuring Mia's.
Am I saying Mia X or No Limit?
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, we were configuring her. So we're working on it. It's coming to a radio or however you listen to the podcast. Near
it's
you.
Coming straight at you. Put your 3D glasses on. There it is.
I got some. No, I have the eclipse glasses. I don't have the 3D glasses. I have the eclipse glasses. So, we're just trying to get it together. We're trying to share with the women in the community. We like to consider ourselves talented, imperial, awakened black women, given our time, TIME, theories, ideas, mindset, and bringing evolution to the table. In this case, a podcast, joining the Freedom Train Network. Woo-woo. So we caution everybody that it might be hot as we sip, and we're all actually tea drinkers. So, we figured Tea Time Black Women Talk was appropriate. And you can join us as you join the guys on freedomtrainnetwork.com. We're sponsored by PaxInc.org. So we are also on Google Play, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Stitcher.
Yes.
FreedomTrainRadio.com.
Yeah. Say that.
Would you say they're not ready for us?
FreedomTrainRadio.com.
That's what I said. Yep. That's what I said.
They
not ready.
Hey, and next time you say Freedom Train Radio, put some more soul into it. You got to put some soul into that, okay?
We're going to be a strong network.
We is. You better say that again.
Yeah, sorry. Those are my old notes, but it's cool, though. I'm here. We're here representing.
What do you mean, no?
Yes.
So.
All right, Joe. Let me take over your show.
You not.
What's the topic for tonight?
Anywho. Today we're actually going to continue the conversation from last week when we talked about sexual assault. in America, the culture of rape in America. I gave you my thoughts, my feelings, a couple solutions and things about sexual assault in America, the culture of rape in America, and different things I thought that we should be doing. So I want to bring, I'm glad that we have Mo and Tam on today, because I wanted some women to give their perspective on the culture of rape in America, and different things that we could do moving forward within our Black community to truly deal with the issue at its roots, like truly at the roots, not putting a Band-Aid on the bullet wound, but really dealing with things at its roots. So that's one of the reasons I want to have you guys on this show, and also to get people exposed to you in the commentary, so when tea time starts, they already know what's going down. So
hold on, before we get too far gone, because you said roots like that during the show last week as well.
Yeah.
Is that how you really say it with your accent?
No, I say roots. I say roots, but when I really mean it, I say roots.
Okay.
Yeah. So if y'all don't understand, roots and roots is the same thing, people.
And quick disclaimer to the audience, unlike most of our guests, these guests have not been prepared. So the comments that they make are going to be raw. So, you know.
Bring it.
Because usually.
Right.
Usually we prepare the guests and they come on with these well-prepared statements because we didn't let them know. Yeah, these guys, they literally just got on the line and we was like, hey, we talking about this. Go.
So y'all got to talk with. So let's do this. Let's get to them raw. So,
we know young whippersnappers now. We have some research and material that we can throw around there and some good information to give. So we got it.
She said whippersnapper.
Y'all
ain't saying no whippersnapper. No little young grasshopper.
Man, stop sleeping on us.
Hey.
So
I want to start this off. I want to ask both of y'all to answer. And we'll start with Mo Knows, since Mo Know.
Let's do it.
When you hear rape culture, and I'm going to ask this to everybody, because I'm just curious. I know it's a conversation, but I'm curious. When you hear rape culture, what do you think?
Well, one of the things, understanding how programming works, I automatically go to some sort of European ideology or indoctrination. And I start looking when I want to research something and get down to maybe the root cause of it or root cause.
There you go.
I start looking at historical information and how the word was used, or the connotation of the word has always been used, and then how that culture was developed and passed on to other ethnicities or groups of individuals. So now today in 2017, when I hear rape culture, I believe that because the root cause is historically a European foundation, I automatically think there's the ideal centers around their normal sexual behaviors within their community. And today we have, sometimes that boils over because we are accepting of their culture into ours. It boils over into other communities that, like the Black community, in which we adopt some of their ideology and apply it to our own culture, when in fact it's not actually natural to us. So I study it from the standpoint of studying someone else's someone else's culture. I look at it when news articles are disseminated. I look for the component of European programming. What do they want us to do? What reaction do they want us to have to it? Or what imaging do they want to perpetuate from this media outlet? and I go from there, and I kind of, you know, am critical on it on those bases. Then for the community portion of it, when I'm speaking to community members, trying to get them to sort of understand where it's rooted in, so that when we start taking credit for certain things like street harassment and how we handle and respond to that, negative outcomes in our community where it comes to the relationship between black men and black women, we want to get I try to get away from those things that are rooted in that European indoctrination or ideology, and that includes rape culture.
So there was a section in there where you basically said rape culture is the standard sexual activity for Europeans.
Right, that's correct. That's the belief. When they conquered, and you know, this is something that goes back historically as a part of like a tutorial. I'm sitting over here in this land. I want this land. When I go over there, conquer that land, I want to be able to not just break, you know, break in and get what I get the spoils, but I want to break in and break the back of that whole land over there, the people. And so rape is the way that we do this, men and women. We know that that's something that's commonly practiced throughout history with the Europeans. So we just, I kind of just look at it like that's their thing, that's what they do. We just have to be careful not to latch on and make it a part of our own, make it a part of everyone's culture.
All right, Black Bear.
You know, I actually did not know there was such a thing as rape culture. I happened to be listening to the radio, or actually trying to listen to music, and Breakfast Club was on, and Charlamagne decided to apologize for contributing to rape culture. And so in that, I looked it up and found out what it was. And I was actually kind of shocked that it was considered a culture. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I was just extremely shocked that it was actually considered a culture. Like, I always considered it I don't know if demeaning is an adjective. But I always considered it something like, that's just demeaning. That action is demeaning. Or what? Demeaning's an adverb. Right? Yeah, I think I'm right. Okay, so I just considered it demeaning more so. Y'all back me up here. Like, more so than, like, a culture. But I do understand how it's considered a culture. So, and it's just quite interesting how there's been a series of things that have happened over time. We are where we are because it's been something over time. And it really has, like, gone way back. And I guess it's just being explored more now because of, social media has hyped things to a whole nother level. But it's just really interesting at this point for me.
Haven't we been talking about how women dress and that kind of thing for a long time?
Right.
And I think that's
right.
One of the contributing factors to what they consider rape culture. Women look at it from a point of view of, I'm being told how I should carry myself and how I should dress so that I don't become a victim of rape. And men are being told that if a woman is dressed a certain way, then it's going to be okay with other women in order if she's violated because she didn't dress the way that appropriately. So that's,
yes.
You know.
Right.
See, that Charlotte, those statements Charlamagne was making on the Breakfast Club is one of the reasons why I want to do this. Talk about this on the Freedom Train is because him coming to the
real.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the whole interview, but I seen that little part. And yeah, and like I said last week, Charlamagne only understood he just come in, like I don't understand how he whatever he just recognized it, but because as a man you. I mean, as a man, you already know that the culture exists, but you may not know how you participate in the culture. So I do commend him for understanding that he may have participated, but he don't understand how he got to the point to where he participated in the culture. You were cultured to be a part of this. So somebody taught you this, and women also participate into this culture because it was most likely women who raised you. And that's not saying that women are going around teaching people how to be rapists, but what I am saying is if we only concentrate and think that men are the ones who contribute and buy into and make this culture of rape happen, then we're sadly mistaken and we're missing half of the puzzle. And until we can get those two parts together, we won't be able to solve this thing. And that was my problem with what he was saying is, I understand you just coming to the realization about yourself, but let's talk about it from a holistic standpoint, though.
I think we got to make some hard, uncomfortable statements, though, if we really going to address it. Like, so if rape culture exists, somebody's teaching it to the next generation. That means both men and women are teaching boys and girls,
right,
although boys mostly, to be rapists.
But they are teaching girls too, because there's a lot of women are, when we talk about this culture of rape, a lot of women are either blaming other women or they're like, well, that's not me, I'm not that type of woman, so I don't have to worry about that, and nothing's being changed. And not just saying that's across the board.
But there are two angles to that, because on the one hand, like, you have the women that are blaming other women, and then on the other hand, you have that other narrative that says that if you're a boy and a woman touches you and you don't like it, you must be gay.
Right, so right, right.
There are a bunch of different angles to it, but I just think we have to make that hard stance.
We do.
To make people uncomfortable where, okay, if we're saying that there is a rape culture, then that means that this current generation had rape or some components of what would make a rape acceptable instilled into them by the previous generation. That means,
man,
yes, your mother and your father taught you to be a rapist.
Yeah. I mean, it's what the reality of this country is. Like I said last week, we have families who go out of their way to protect the molesters and the rapists within their family. Like, people know that these things happen, but they sweep them under the rug. And to me, it's being able to get at the root of that, and that's not okay to be existing. No grown-ass adult should be allowed to exist in no family, and you know they touching on some damn kids. They need their ass whooped.
Agreed.
But, I mean, we go into, because, like, we were talking about this offline. You know, you look at the way kids are socialized by the opposite sex. You know, you look at the compliments that a teenage girl would receive, the compliments that a teenage boy would receive, the behaviors that are respected from a teenage girl, from a teenage boy. Even when we were talking about the conversation about cheerleaders we were having, and about, you know, how girls are raised to want to grow up and become a cheerleader, but how does that translate to the adult world when you think about what cheerleaders do, what their role is in life, and what they wear. And again, we got to get back into this, what they wear, because that seems to be such a major component of the discussion. And then you go into young boys, what makes them acceptable, what makes them receive praise. And even to, I was thinking about something as we were talking the other day. And I was thinking about the fact that every time I got praised by an older woman as a teenage boy, it was always, and I'm talking about without exception, every time I got praised physically, it was always, if you were 10 years older,
mm-hmm.
what I would do to you. And that's like what I heard universally. Like, ooh, I can't wait for you to grow up. Ooh, call me when you, you know what I'm saying? Call me when you get 18. You know, I haven't had one of my grandma's friends. It was real weird, but whatever. She will always say, if you was 10 years older and I was 30 years younger, you wouldn't be able to get away from me. Now, you and then you start talking about rape culture.
But if a man said that, it'd be all hell to break loose, though. Let's be real.
But I'm saying, like, when we get into this conversation about rape culture, what sort of message does that send to young men? What sort of message, you know, like, how does that sexualize them? How does that get them thinking about sex and intercourse? How does that get them thinking about their relationships with the opposite sex? Are those dynamics teaching respect? Are those dynamics teaching control? Like we really got to get into all of these different components when we begin to talk about rape culture, especially when we begin to talk about male socialization to females, especially since, you know, let's be honest, for the most part, men are the ones doing the raping.
Go ahead, Mom. Sorry, go ahead.
We have to be realistic with the socialization, too. And I agree. I've heard that same thing, Pat, that you experienced. I've heard that most commonly when I was younger, actuated towards my brother. And my mother would hear, they would be so bold enough to say it in front of my mother, and she would snap back at him. Like, that's not okay, that's not cool, you know, for you to say that. But in the same respect, because that showed a lack of, you know, that was disrespectful to my mom, you know, disrespectful to themselves. So if you didn't have any value, you're not interested in her son for anything but a physical type relationship, then that's really disrespectful. You know, how is that going to come off? But at any rate, you know, when we talk about the comparison of that, where how men are socialized towards women, men won't say that. They don't say, if I was 10 years younger, they don't say that kind of thing. They actually, you know, I think it's a more of an action thing for men to approach, even if the age is coming into question, versus sit back and, you know, it used to be in a day for a woman to just say things. But I do know women who did more than just say things, too. So, but the thing is, I think it is more common for a man to desire that and be in it. And it's accepted that it's okay if he goes after that, because it doesn't matter if he was 10 years young, if the female was 10 years younger, it's okay anyway.
And that's like the mindset that's supposed to happen. You know, you're a man, right. You're supposed to do that. And that's not okay. Right. That is definitely not okay. Now I have two questions. One for you, Mo, and one for both you and Tammy. So, Mo, in a world or in a society, the culture where the, you know, this rape culture, because you have raised three daughters, I'm interested to know some of the things that you had to teach your daughter, or you felt you had to teach your daughters for them to be able to survive this culture, and how did your own upbringing affect the lessons that you taught your daughters?
Well, I'll start with that first, because that was critical, because everything that I experienced it as a child growing up obviously made me want to make certain goals for my kids when, you know, when I began to have children. So growing up, I had a very strict upbringing, and that sexual component was largely influenced by Christianity or religion. So you pretty much did whatever the Bible told you to do. So that meant fornication was out. You didn't have sex out of marriage, outside of marriage, you know, that kind of thing. So that's where my upbringing was in. But my experience is that everybody was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say doing it because that's what we said back then. But when it came to having kids, I realized the biggest component that was missing is that my parents talked at me. They didn't talk to me. So it was like, just don't have sex. You know, this is not acceptable. You know, they just laid down the rules and expected us to follow those rules. There was no conversation, none whatsoever. And the other thing I saw a lot as a kid was low self-esteem. And when you see it and you can point it out and recognize it, you know, I've seen low self-esteem in both girls and boys who didn't have any value for their own temple, and, you know, they were able to, you know, to carry themselves, and girls who did the same thing. I kind of looked at them in the same light. There was no difference, just because it was okay to socially for a man child to have several different sexual partners, and it wasn't okay socially for a female to. In my eyes, y'all both, you know, something's not right there. You both have low self-esteem. So when it came to my girls in terms of the rape culture, I didn't specifically speak to rape culture. I spoke to a certain mindset of self-esteem. Because if you have high self-esteem, everybody that you come in contact with, everyone that you engage, will adjust their energy to fit yours. It just happens. So a rapist looks for an opportunity to rape.
Right.
And
true.
If you're dealing with someone who has a high self-esteem, who has a value for certain situations, they won't get themselves, they won't find themselves too often in the line of sight of someone who wants to make them a victim.
Okay.
So that's where it kind of started with me. And the way you do the self-esteem thing is you don't say that stupid, crazy stuff like somebody got good hair because they got this. You don't put European ideals into their head so that they think that European, the standard for beauty and intelligence and education and all that, you don't put those ideals in their head. And you spend more time with them than other people do. So I didn't do after school programs. I went. When my kids were at school age, they go. I fed them breakfast. You don't eat breakfast there because that was our first time. That was our first get up. That was our energy for the day. And then I talked to them about their school day. I really wasn't interested in what they were actually learning. I wanted to learn about all the side conversations that they had with other students, teachers, anybody. I wanted to hear about those things because that's where the programming largely starts. I told them about, you know, not getting into any disciplinary actions, because teachers can unwittingly, or administrators can unwittingly, put a boy and a girl in a situation where things that are not supposed to happen, like sexual conduct, it happens because they can put you in that mindset that it's okay. And they'll do it by characterizing or putting you in a, you know, disciplinary situations, putting them, you know, just doing things to say, oh, you're the loud black female child. And this kid, they'll call a kid rambunctious, where it used to be something positive, you know, where, oh, he's just rambunctious, and now it's something negative written on a disciplinary slip, and now this kid is labeled as that. That's just a short distance to, you know, well, you know, sexual deviance, to inappropriate sexual behavior, to that. It's just a short distance. So basically, high self-esteem, or getting your kid's self-esteem to a space where they can, you know an opportunistic individual who wants to do something negative is not able to.
Well, let me ask this question, because I do agree that the self-esteem helps, but how does the self-esteem really, as far as somebody being physical toward, like being able to trap somebody off, or like somebody goes to the bathroom and somebody wants to, you know, like take the opportunity,
right?
When you, yeah, like how do you or are there other methods that you use, because people, self-esteem does have its place, but I don't think across the board it could help. So in those other areas, or do you agree with that, or in those other areas do you kind of use different tactics to try to help to stop that?
Well, let's say a specific topic, you know, and because you're right, you know, you say, well, high self-esteem is the most important component in that, but what's the action that someone can take to even get to that point? But let's take a specific action like street harassment. I was having a conversation with a male friend of mine about street harassment, and I was joking with them, but I was talking to them over the phone, and my oldest daughters, who are all in college now, were around, and they heard the conversation. They overheard me saying, what happened? When did street harassment become such a negative thing? I thought when you got street harassed that, you know, or we didn't even call it street harassment, it was like catcalling or whatever it was, that you would just ignore the catcalling and just be like, oh, I still got it, and keep on walking. I didn't know that you even engaged people. Like, when did that start happening, that it was an actual name for it, street harassment? I never even knew that existed.
I know, that's the same thing I said about rape culture. I was like, that's a name? Like, what?
Right. So
when that started?
When I'm right, so now when I'm overhearing it, or when my kids are overhearing a conversation that I was having with it, they're bringing their perspective. They're 20 years old. They're just trying to navigate their way through college and finances and all kind of things that are being thrown their way. And so they have a whole onslaught of friends who pick up information, watch television, watch programming, and they come predisposed or prepackaged with that mantra of, oh, rape culture is bad, street harassment is bad. It's a whole feminism mantra that they have out there. It's like a report. It's like asking a court reporter to report what has already been said in court, and they can just rattle it off, you know, in terms of all the feminism agenda scripts that are out there. But at any rate, as far as street harassment was concerned, my kids wanted to then have a conversation about that. And so we were talking about that, and largely a big part of what I talked to them about is transference of energy. Someone is making a lewd or inappropriate comment to you, so what's the first thing you want to do? You want to give them your energy when they're not giving you good energy. So you're going to stop, engage them. You know what? How does that work? If there's no physical component in that, then you don't give them any energy and you keep on going. But in the moment where somebody gets groping, grabbing, that kind of thing, this is where I tell you that self-esteem does work, because I can guarantee you most guys who are in that situation who feel like they have to take advantage of somebody don't have high self-esteem. And if you start coming at them or talking to them in a certain way, they will back down and find somebody else to target. So
okay,
that self-esteem is important. But
So in that regard what you're talking about in this specific space, not necessarily the person who would be the victim, but the person who would be in the perpetrator. Your self-esteem was higher. They wouldn't even be in the position to be the perpetrator. That's what you're saying.
Right, because they don't have any value. Okay. Anytime that you feel like you have to, you don't deserve to be in a healthy sexual relationship where you sharing and connecting with an individual that you have to go take it by force or you have to do it in a deviant nature, there's some component of self-esteem that's lacking there where you don't value yourself. You don't have a whole lot of value for yourself.
Well, I think self-esteem might be a component, but I also think it's taught that it's cool, you know. I mean, like in college, even in high school, when I was coming up, you know, it was the cool thing to do, you know, like, I don't want to target the athletes, but I will say, you know, like, it was just cool, you know, you walk by, you grab a chick by the butt or, you know,
you
like,
talking about what they label street harassment.
I don't know. I didn't even
that's
know.
More
like,
physical,
like,
right?
I don't even know what street harassment is. Maybe I really live in a bubble. Like, I mean, I'm not even thinking about street harassment. I'm thinking about we at the teen club or we at the club, you know, and somebody, you're dancing or whatever, somebody starts groping on you. Like, people think that's cool. And my thing is, and has always been, dancing is just dancing for me. Like, that's it. Long as you're not kissing, licking, sticking, or whispering, it ain't nothing else. Like, it is what it is. It stopped there. You're not going home with me. And anytime you start groping on me, thinking you're going home with me, I got to stand up and it's over. Like, and I don't mean like stand up, but I got to walk away from that grind. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't.
Yes.
Once it goes to the touching and the feeling, it's over. It's done. As far as going to the bathroom, like my mom always, like, she was like, don't go anywhere by yourself, but I also was what's considered sheltered. So I didn't get to go out much. When I went out with my friends, I had to be back home by 12. I mean, my mother literally picked me up from prom. She told me I could go to the Waffle House, but she had to take me to the Waffle House, you know. So in all of that, I kind of learned on my own, but I did take heed to what she said by not going anywhere by yourself, which I don't go anywhere as far as, like, in those type of settings by myself. And I'm not going to leave my friends by themselves. So that's definitely, you know, a learned behavior. I recently brought my younger sister kind of like on a girls' trip with me, and she had her friends with her, and I did it so that I could monitor. Like, it, you know, it was really a headache for me. But I did it so I could monitor the reactions and how things were going down. And literally walking off the strip, it took us 2 hours to get off the strip. And as we're doing this, I'm talking to her, telling her, okay, this is, okay, you walk and talk, you walk and talk. Like, people want to stop you, hold your hand. Yeah, we don't have time for that. Somebody might be drunk, you know. You got to grab your friend by the hand. Let's keep going. Let's keep walking. Like, that's how people get caught up, you know. And you need to understand that's how people get caught up. You need to keep an eye over your shoulder. You need to make sure you know what kind of group of friends you're in. I don't go out with my coworkers. Why? Because if you get drunk, I ain't trying to babysit you. I'm not trying to be responsible, you know, for you. I got enough responsibilities on the other side with the friends that I do know. So I think when you speak on, you know, things to do and not to do, like, I just learned I tend to be the quote-unquote responsible person in the party. Now, granted, don't get me wrong, I like to dance, and back in the day, you know, nickname was Drop It Like It's Hot, but it stopped right there. Get up, walk out. I remember one time we were partying, shut the party down. My friends circled me and walked me out of there so nobody would grab me. Like, I mean, it's just, you know, mm-hmm. Those are the type of things that you have to learn. And even though, you know, like my husband says, it's kind of weird, like going to the strip club. So you go to the strip club, you're looking at these naked women. You can't touch them. So what's the point in going? Because you wanting to touch them sets you up for standing outside, waiting on them to come out of the car because they done worked you up so good, and you can't do nothing about it. But that's where the mentality starts. You can look, but don't touch. But you have to be a strong individual not to want to do that.
That so the strip club is the catalyst for, well, I think it's actually on topic because if I'm understanding it correct, those types of activities like strip club, like maybe even porn, lead to overactive sexual behaviors that could lead to.
Well, I say this because the misconception is most of the sexual assault and the sexual misconduct is going to come from outside the home. Because then we have to just go back and really remember that.
No, it's inside. You're right.
Yeah. 85% of the sexual misconduct that's going to happen is going to be inside the home or inside your circle of love, your circle of trust. So that's where most of the sexual misconduct is going to come from, statistically speaking. So I do think that right there has to be taken into account. But at the same time, you have to be a person with that in you when you're going into these environments. Like that has already has to be in you to not have that certain respect or to be looking for somebody to validate your power and control against. To me, because there are people who go into these strip clubs and these other environments who go in and they can go home, but it's just, I believe that there's men and women who that's already in them. And so those environments don't help. Porn is, and the club don't help, but going into it, that's how they got to look at it. And also being able to distinguish between the what will be perceived as street harassment and what will be perceived as having a good time in the club or in the party and thing. And I'm just saying this because I'm just thinking some people might try to take what you said the wrong way, but being able to perceive the differences between those two realms and understanding, yes, in this realm I'm having fun, I'm dancing, all these things, but if things get too far, then we got to shut that down. And also walking down the street, I'm minding my business and somebody come mess with me. Because like me and Pat talked about this, like they had that one lady who she was out for 8 hours trying to pick up information or video on street harassment, out for 8 hours, only got 10 minutes worth of video, a white woman in a black community. So those things do have to be taken into account when talking about that with the coach.
I think we got to also, like, socialization is a big component, and I think they both hit on socialization in some way, shape, form, or fashion with things that they said. And I know Mo hit on a very powerful point that I think isn't really looked at enough when you look at, like, socialization towards sex in general. Girls are told not to have sex. Boys are told not to get a girl pregnant.
Right, right.
And those are two distinctly different messages. Like, they really are. You know, you have a girl being told don't have sex. And I know that's said a lot. Don't have sex. Sex is, in a lot of cases, for a lot of women, made to be, you know, it's unclean, it's dirty. Matter of fact, Joy and I was just watching the TED Talk by this crazy-looking white lady who was going through all of that. And meanwhile, boys are almost encouraged to have sex. The only drawback is we're discouraged from getting the girl pregnant. So it's like you can have all the sex you want.
Just don't get nobody pregnant.
Just don't get nobody pregnant. So you just look at the distinctions between the message, even when you look at the objectification of the situation. That's where we go back to the cheerleading component that I was talking about earlier.
That was going to be my next.
I'll back off because there was another component, like even in terms of the dancing component that Tammy brought up, where you look at how girls dance and she, you know, call herself, you know, Miss Drop It Like It's Hot or whatever. You know, I do not call myself Drop It Like It's Hot. That's what you said.
They call me Drop It Like It's Hot.
You know what I meant. So they called her
tell you how old she is.
But it all goes back to the socialization of being a sexual creature, being a sexual man, or being a sexual object, being objectified, putting yourself in a situation to get that sort of attention, and then men being encouraged to act on that energy as long as, you know, they don't get nobody pregnant. Because I'm going to be honest, for me, dancing is not just dancing. So, like, I understand that's a perspective thing. That's a, like, and that doesn't give anybody a right to whatever. But I know what's going on in my body and in the bodies of most of the men that I've talked to. When you got a girl call herself just dancing and she grinding the shit out of your pants. Like, that is not just dancing for most dudes. For most women, I would venture to say, I mean, we ain't doing it. It's just innocent, harmless fun, blah, blah, blah. For most dudes, you grinding your ass on my dick.
Well, see, I think that's where the line and the distinction, and I'm always talking about this, how sexuality versus over-sexualization. Because it's okay to be sexual, but it's not okay to be extra overly sexualized and just over-sexualize everything. You know, and to me, that's where some of the issues come in. Like, it's very okay to be sexual.
Right. I agree.
Because I
see,
think...
That's also why I like... and I had to do more research before I stick my foot in my mouth, but just a shout-out to, like, the Caribbean culture. Like, I like that, you know, they just dance. Like,
that's
what
African
it is.
That's African culture, period.
Yeah, but the Caribbean culture.
I say that's Caribbean culture, African culture. That's they've been doing that forever.
Yeah,
we got these over sexualized minds.
Culture, you're not necessarily grinding, like you're just close. Like, you know, I like that. I actually prefer that. You know, the salsa, well, the two step. You know, the
I
close.
I would stop you with on the Caribbean thing because. One, I don't know that any of us are familiar enough. I know we see them.
Well, that's why
dancing.
I said it was just a shout out. Like it and wasn't, and I would have to do some research.
Because we also have, you know, we've done the research and even had the discussions you and I, where the Caribbeans are, you know, the Caribbean islands, those places, they're having huge problems with teen pregnancies. So I'm not saying. It's connected to the dancing. I am saying that there are cultural issues going on in those places that we simply just don't like. I admire their dancing as well. Now, on the other end, I have seen grown-ass women grinding on little boys, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because they're, and it just could be just be me, but I think that we want to be sexual. And you know, express our sexuality, but we've been cultured to be over-sexualized and just indulge in unhealthy sexual conduct.
But, Joe, like, dancing, even from most of the cultures in Africa that I've studied, dancing served a purpose. And sexual
right.
dancing, so it was not a fun activity. It was not something that you just did for entertainment. Like if
right.
like if you were doing a seductive sexual dance, it was usually, from everything I've read, a honeymoon type dance or an engagement type
right.
dance.
Right.
Some sort of situational dance where you were displaying yourself sexually for your male, for your
right.
mate, for the person you were getting with. So that's where I get to the point where I'm like, okay, so we can be happy about the fact that they just dance. But, let's be real about the situation. If you see somebody with a fat ass wiggling it in a circle, that activity is designed. Get mad at me all you want. That activity is designed to elicit a certain type of response. Now, we hope the man is in control enough to control his response, and if he ain't, I agree with Joe what you said last week. He need his ass whooped. I agree with that. And then he needs some counseling afterwards. Those are your exact words last week. Whoop his ass and then get him some counseling. But let's not be ignorant to the fact that you shaking your ass in a circle and popping your breast up and down, that activity is designed to elicit a physical and sexual response. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I'm done. I'm done, Joe. I'm done.
All right, Stephen A. Patrick.
Right. I agree
right,
with that, though.
Right.
I agree. Because
right.
We,
breast and ass, though.
We
can
have
we say
taken,
butt off instead of breast? I mean, I mean, I'm just saying.
Back
be
you, let, Mo, let Mo talk.
Yeah, okay. Well, I agree specifically in that we have bastardized these, what the connotation of certain things to make it fit into society's either religion or judgment or to be able to sit in judgment. And one of those things is dancing. The other one is how we partake in spirits. But all of those things, because we because of the connotation of the word or the action that we accept, we allow it to go out of hand. Because you're right, dancing was more ritualistic in terms of before a specific event. That's when it would happen. We just didn't go out every Friday and in the, you know, in the Serengeti, I don't know where, you know, but we just didn't, you know, have, you know, it wasn't a weekly event or weekly thing. It was a festival or it centered around a marriage or something else in which you did that, or even in private quarters, you know, for a honeymoon type of thing. So when we take it now and put it into modern culture, of course, it's because it's not a natural thing for us to do that. Of course, there are going to be anomalies in there where things happen outside of what's really normally supposed to happen, which is two individuals having a connection, probably on a more spiritual plane. The same thing with drinking and some drugs that are not manufactured but grown, in that when we took spirits in, alcohol, other herbs and that kind of thing, it was supposed to be so that we can make a higher spiritual connection with our ancestors or whomever, not so that we can get sloppy drunk and get a DUI. Or in that case, driving the donkey or driving the horse while drunk. You know, I don't know. But the point is the more we accept certain cultural aspects, the more detrimental it is to our own community and culture.
I agree. I think, like, dancing is always an interesting subject because we like to dance, and I think that's something that is kind of, I think, well, first off, humans like to dance. It's a form of expression. But, you know, we seem to like to dance a little bit more than other people. And I think that's
because we can.
Well, yeah, there's that. But even those of us that can't dance, like, still, we still like to try. So,
it's a form of communication.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at. Like, it's a form, us being the spiritual beings that we are, and I love the way Monique put it in terms of spirits and things of that nature. Like, dancing is a form of spiritual communication. And for most people, dancing and grinding close and all of that, that energy that you're sharing, that creates a bond, superficial or otherwise. There's still a situation there. That's why you can meet a dude who been dancing with, you know, he danced with one girl for one song, and he's still thinking about her a couple of days later. You know, like that's connection,
right,
bro.
Right.
So, but I think, you know, when we get into rape culture, even in this modern society, we still looking at men basically being raised to be predators and women being raised to be the objects of predation. Where you look at a girl who is taught to gain attention by putting her ass up and her face down instead of gaining attention by simply two-stepping, you know, or being taught to gain attention by, you know, doing this sort of thing instead of being taught to gain attention by being this sort of way. And that's why, again, Mo, when you were talking about high self-esteem and raising your daughters to be this and to be that, you know, like me and Joe talk all the time because we talk about how there's a difference between being something, being a certain type of way and doing something, you know, and a lot of the times the emphasis isn't really on being a particular thing, it's on doing a particular thing. And even in this conversation with rape culture, how often do people talk about what men are or what women are? What does it mean to be a man or a woman versus them just talking about what men and women do? The conversation stay in the do, they never get in the be, and we never get to be anywhere that can create a situation where we actually begin to change things. I don't know. I said a lot. Somewhere in there was a point.
Well, it, like to me, and all to me, it all goes back to Western culture and the sickness in Western culture that has cultured us to be so over-sexualized that when the topic of sex and sexuality is introduced and this is happening, people go overboard. But also the low self-esteem and the other issues that go on within our people, that because something within this culture happens for future generations to still continue the same behaviors as past generations as far as this culture of rape. Because, like, you know, I've been saying it since last, when I've always said rape is a part of the foundation of America. That's how America became, one of the reasons why America became to be what it is today, is using rape as a tactic for not just the Africans, but all the other indigenous people that they came across in this world, but also those mindsets and just the way European culture, like missionary style, like having the people believe that if you only do it missionary style, then it's a problem. But at the same time, they in the forefront is we're morally right, but behind closed doors, you're raping little boys and girls. Like, you know, that's European culture. That's the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, but I do want to ask this before we run out of time. I want to ask you, both of you,
got
about
no time limits.
Hey man,
sorry,
you know,
go ahead.
I do want to ask you both about the cheerleaders, because Pat and I had this conversation about cheerleaders a couple weeks ago. The first time I really actually thought about the way cheerleaders are presented, I was at this conference for an organization called A Call to Men, which is designed to help teach men how to be allies in the fight against the culture of rape. And it was talking about the presentation of cheerleaders, but I also want to add in like the dancing girls too, because I see a lot of these videos from a lot of these high schools, and the girls come prancing in these outfits and just the way they're presented. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? And do you think that kind of ties into the culture of rape that people may not even realize that they are participating in, or is that something, in your opinion, that people are just kind of blowing out of proportion?
Tammy, you want to take that one, and then I'll go after you, or you want me to go? I got a response to it.
I think that it's a combination, because the skirts are short. You know, they're getting shorter. I watched the dancing girls. They had on leotards, and it was cold outside, right?
Freezing cold.
And I'm quick to say something sexy, you sexy, it's sexy, whatever. So they had these robes on, like, and not even robes, I guess like blankets maybe, you know. But as they were getting up to dance, they were taking the blankets off, and I was like, damn, that's hot. But... it's a sexual thing. Like, the way they get up and dance is sexual. They take the blankets off. It look like they coming out their clothes. It's sexual. You know, it looks nice. But on the flip side of that, and that's me as a woman saying that, you know, I'm comfortable in my skin. It looks nice, but who else is looking at that like, dang, that, you know, I'm going to take her home or whatever the case might be. So I'm sure it contributes quite a bit. You know, there's the old jock stories or I wouldn't even say the jock, the male cheerleader story. She got on a short skirt and, you know, I might have fingered her as I pushed her up in the air or something like that. You know, it was a oops. I don't know how true all of that happened, but you hear about all of that.
I've heard that.
Right. And then on the other side, it's like things to me, everything is what you make it. Like, you can make something more than what it is. You know, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't be what it is, because, like I said, definitely the things are suggestive. The skirts are short. You can still be a cheerleader in some sweatpants and, you know, and a sweatshirt. They do it all the time when it's raining or when it's cold. You can still be a dancing girl. Because if I wanted to be a dancing girl, it wasn't because of the dress. It was because I like to dance. If I wanted to be a cheerleader, it wasn't because of the short skirt. It's because I wanted to be, quote-unquote, popular. So I looked at things from a different perspective, but I can also see how it contributed to the, quote-unquote, rape culture. Also to say that, you know, when I talk about everything, it's mental. It's, you've got to tackle these things mentally. And if you don't see them that way, then they aren't that way. But if you're looking at it that way, then it is going to be that way. And everything doesn't have to be what it is. You can definitely change the quote-unquote culture and make it something else. You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's kind of where I'm at with it, and that's why I say I kind of live in my bubble, because even, you know, and I'm going off on a tangent when I say Halloween. If you take Halloween and you make it about the evil spirits and the voodoo, that's what Halloween is. But if you take Halloween as an opportunity to dress up and have fun and, you know, tell folklore, then it becomes something else. So I guess that's where it comes down to changing the mindset of people. But no, cheerleaders don't have to be in any bitty skirts. And, you know, the dancing girls either. And it's funny because if you listen to some of the young children, you know, like I have a niece and she was like, ooh, auntie, I want to be a cheerleader, but her skirt's too short. You know, she's 10. What happens when she turns 16? Is it cute now? I'm waiting to see. She's still 10, so I'm going to see at 16 if she's still going to think their skirts are too short, or if all of a sudden she's going to want a short skirt, you know?
Definitely some good points. From my perspective, and specifically because we're talking just about the cheerleading component, as someone who was active in sports, I kind of look at it a different way. In that these ladies are generally, yeah, there are some male cheerleaders and out there with them, but for the most part, what you see is 6 or 7 or maybe 10 females in a costume, all dressed alike, coordinated outfits, coordinated moves. That sounds like a competition to me. And yes, because the cheerleading has the wardrobe has always been geared towards the female physique, then, you know, the dancers, the dance squad, the cheerleaders or whatever, they've become skimpier, more see-through, more, more out of, you know, more in line with the element of being seductive. But when I see 10 people dressed alike, same shoes, same everything on, hair maybe even similarly styled, there's no sexual component there for me. And I know that, in, you know, most people who have, you know, any type of strong sexual desire, passion, can probably see sex in almost anything, that something that's very innocuous, they can see a sexual component in it. But that's a stretch to put, to me, that's a stretch to put that on. That is an actual, they legitimately feel about their cheerleading as like it's competition. Like our moves got to be on point. We got to choreograph. We got to coordinate. Where's the sexual component in that? You know, so that, to me, I think it's overblown to the degree that we haven't explained to people who are viewing it, the audience, that they need to respond in a certain way so that it is viewed by anybody else looking on it at a first time as competition, as those ladies being professionals out there doing their job or whatever, or doing whatever they're supposed to do. And from the standpoint of the cheerleaders, that, you know, they got to keep, to stay true to whatever you have a passion for, then you have to keep the guidelines for it under control. So the more that you push the envelope for it, you know, by having certain outfits, then the more you get people looking at the credibility of what you do and saying, hey, that ain't cheerleading. You might as well, we can go to the strip club and get that same thing.
Right.
So you have to, and if you want to uphold the credibility of your sport, the reputation, the character of your sport, then put all the elements in it that would allow that to happen and still be able to maintain, you know, whatever you do, because they do put work into that. They do practice. They do choreograph. So what about that should be derived as, you know, because they're wearing something, the shorts or skirt, or they got a see-through whatever on, you know, that there's some type of inappropriate behavior occurring when they all dressed alike and got coordinated moves. That's a jump.
Right, and I think as far as cheerleading went, I mean, because I used to, well, I was a cheerleader once upon a time, and I don't remember feeling sexy in my skirt. Now, it wasn't like short, you know, and I remember feeling like it might have been a, because I've got a big butt, so, like, anything on me rises. So I'm like, okay. You know, I remember trying to, you know, tuck it down a little bit, and I ended up with one that probably was a little too big. But, I mean, I think the pleats in the skirts were initially made for, like, movement, like fluid movement. I mean, and they could definitely do that stuff in pants. But even so, cheerleaders have also been known not to really have sexual movements. Like, they're pretty jerky, like, to the point of nauseam. Like, you're like, can you flow that just a little bit more? You know, because they'll do the dance routine, but you're like, wow, it's great technically, but can you put a little more soul into that? So, anyways, I don't know. It's definitely a flip of a coin, for sure, you know.
I know me and Pat had this conversation before. Now, when I'm thinking about it, because from a male's perspective, first of all, I'm just being honest, from a male's perspective, to me, I don't even know why the cheerleaders are at the game. Other than for me to look at. For me, that when I was growing up, I'm just being honest. That was my perspective growing up. Why are you here? I'm watching, it's a football game. We're not really paying attention to you all. But I like your outfit and you fit. And I'm seeing what you have on, and I like the revealingness of it. That was my mindset when I was a young man growing up. Now, when I'm sitting in this seminar, and I'm listening, I don't remember everything they said, because it was over 7 years ago. But when I'm listening to them talking about cheerleaders, I think in some respects they had some point, but at the same time, to go back to what we were saying earlier, the difference between sexuality and over-sexualization. Because, like, the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders are known for being the sexy cheerleaders. The Laker girls are known for being the sexy cheerleaders. And so, you know, we have those, and if you can go back and, like, watch some of the TV shows, and it to me, it seems like a lot of the things that they go through with some of these women, they themselves put themselves in a box, and this is, I have to fit this mold and this mold and this mold, and I don't know, it just, to me, I don't think nothing's wrong with cheerleading, but at the same time, I ain't gonna lie, as a grown man, I don't feel comfortable going to a high school game and these young teenage girls are dressed this way at this football game. And like you said, if it's 30 degrees outside, well, y'all got these. That's just how I'm thinking now versus how the way I thought back then. Well, I thought back then I was like, I don't know why you're here, but you do look good, and I'm glad you're looking good while you're here. And now at this point, it's like I don't feel comfortable seeing some of these young girls in some of these outfits. And then they have a lot of these videos of these dancing girls who, before the game, when they're walking into the stands, they have these extra sexualized walks with these outfits on. And it doesn't, for me right now, and it may be I have to change a certain mindset or something. And if I do, just let me know. But I just don't feel comfortable looking at that, you know.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, speaking from the point of view of another man, and I could be wrong in the history, but coming up, his cheerleaders were a distraction for the other team. Like, you know, look at our cheerleaders. Now we finna score because you're looking at our cheerleaders. You know, like that seems to be what. And when I say coming up, I don't mean me coming up. I'm saying like when I look at, as far as I can tell, cheerleaders back in the day, like the origins of the cheerleader seems to have been not just to lead the cheers of the crowd and to motivate the crowd and get the crowd pumped up, but also to kind of distract the other team. So, like, Mo, I think you made an interesting point about the competitiveness, because when I see cheerleaders at cheer competitions, you know, when we used to,
totally different from the games.
Right. When we used to have cable and you channel surfing, you see the girls in the competition, completely different vibe. I never looked at cheerleaders in a cheer competition and was, you know, had any sort of sexual whatever. Now, I always did wonder, why are they doing splits and lifting their legs and all this other shit up in a skirt? Like, that component never made sense to me at all. Like, why are we? But then you go back to looking at the uniforms women typically wear. Like, and then in those same competitions, the boys would be there in long pants. So it's not like the boys is wearing these super short shorts and they're not. You got the girls in the skirts and the boys in the long pants. And that, like, why can't the girls be doing the moves in long pants? You go back to, like, we started talking about football as well. And you look at the uniforms that those female football players are wearing. Shit is ridiculous. Like,
yeah, that lingerie football league, that's fucking ridiculous, man.
Like, that's marketed for sexualization, though.
They don't even care about those girls' safety. Like, they don't even care about y'all. They just give you a helmet. Football players wear helmets and shoulder pads when we do walkthroughs, not in full contact sport. They don't even care about them damn women.
But that's where I get into, we get back to the socialization of everything. And I think you guys being women, you are going to look at it different because you've kind of been socialized to look at it different. And us being guys, and that's why conversations from both sides are so important. Us being guys, we look at it different. Like, when I was in high school and we would look at the cheerleaders, you know, like, the only time we were looking at the cheerleaders was when the, you know, whatever sport we was looking at was trash. And we just didn't want to look at it no more. What's the only other thing to look at? The cheerleaders. Oh, she thick. Wait, did she do a split? Oh, you saw that? You saw that? I saw a pube. You know, we didn't say pube, but, you know, I can't.
Right, but we wasn't, like, honest, to be honest, we wasn't looking at the cheerleaders as if they were serious athletes. We was looking at them as sexual objects. At least I was. I'm just being honest.
Right, and I think that's the way most men would say that they looked at the cheerleaders, but I think that goes back to, again, socialization. You know, how we're taught to view women, how we're taught to view women's bodies, and then again, how women are taught to present themselves and how they're taught to present their bodies. Now, I'm not making no excuses one way or another. I'm just saying what the way it appears to be to me. The cheerleading thing, I don't understand. I do agree, and it wasn't until I started watching cheer competitions that I really began to see cheerleading as a sport. Like, these girls, these women are legit. Like, they're doing the splits, they're doing the flips, they're doing the this, they're doing the that. I just don't understand why they have to do it in miniskirts. I don't understand that component. And it's the same thing with, like, you go through all sports with women. Gymnastics. I think gymnastics is disgusting. Let's just be, like, gymnastics is disgusting. Why do you have 12-year-old girls running around in skin-tight tights with their pants crawling up their ass doing flips? And it, you could say, well, you taking it too far. They don't have the boys dressed like that. So why can't the girls do the same flips in the uniforms that the boys are doing? You go into figure skating. The women are basically ass out on ice. Like, on ice, they assed out. Like, why ain't the men assed out on ice? You know, and you just go down the line in terms of sports.
Really want the men assed out on ice?
No, I don't want the men assed
we
out.
We don't.
I'm just
but we don't want the women assed out either.
I'm just saying, so you go down the line. The only sport where it seems like, when it comes to women, that there it's about the sport more so than the appeal of the women is basketball, WNBA. Yeah.
And soccer. And softball.
Well, no, because... Okay, I'll give you soccer
you give
and softball.
Yeah, you give those two.
But I can't really give you...
And swimming.
No, I can't give you swimming. I'm not even going to. Stop it. But I give you soccer...
But the men wear the Speedos, too, in swimming.
I can't give you softball, and the reason why I can't give you softball is because when the women's softball team won their medal... People weren't talking about how great they played. They were talking about how beautiful they were. So
yeah, because they used to be in hit, looking like men.
No, but why does that matter? You got a group of women that just proved that they were the best women's softball
team. Yeah, and that point, praise them for the athletic prowess.
That's a breathtaking
Tammy,
moment. But
nobody's, like, if Tom Brady won a Super Bowl last year, nobody said, hey, the most handsome man quarterback in the world, Tom Brady, just won a Super Bowl. They said this great quarterback, Tom Brady. And so I'm with Pat on that. It's.
But did he appear in the magazine the next week talking about he the most handsome man in the world?
Yeah, they've already done that. They've done that plenty of times with Tom Brady. They've already labeled him as the most one of the most beautiful white men ever to ever live. So he's looked at as a sex symbol. I mean, that's what they, like, you know you can't listen to Vogue and all that other stuff, but nevertheless, Tom Brady has been viewed as a sex symbol, but we do see that the women are sexualized more so than men in these athletic realms. Now, I will disagree with you a little bit on the softball, Pat, as far as the outfits and things. Now, I didn't see that part, that telecast that you saw, but just as far as we're talking about just the outfits, I don't think the outfits are over-sexualized.
No, the outfits aren't sexualized at all. No.
Right.
If you get some sort of sexual excitement out of a woman's softball outfit, you're you got other issues that you need. Like, you're overly something.
Yeah.
But, you know. But it's just, you know, like I say, like, going back to that, I think that lingerie football league is trash. Whoever thought about it is trash. And they need to get that shit. They need to do away with that league. Like, they really do need to do it. Like, they don't even give a damn. Like, you can't be running around in damn bikinis like that. Like, why? Like, they don't even give a damn about the safety of those women. I'm going to keep saying that. That's one of the things I keep talking about. You wear,
yeah,
we call those,
women
we call.
Signing up. Ain't nobody put a gun to their head. They try
I'm
to
not,
hey,
I'm not excusing them.
Play football.
I'm not excusing them. I'm not excusing them
in
their decision. But that's why I say the whole thing is trash, though.
Bad. Well, I'm going to skin my knees and my shins and my legs. And my midriff, like, I don't understand why male football players wear their shirt up. Why would I do that?
No,
well,
but
I like it when the male football players wear their shirt up. Dude, I still watch.
That's not the point, though, Mo. Like, I just be thinking about them getting skinned up. Like, I just be like, ugh.
Well, they ain't worried about getting skinned up, they on grass. But it's just, it's like those men choosing to roll their shirts up versus these women being put in bikinis is two different things. So,
is it?
Yeah, because I chose to roll my shirt up versus this is the standard uniform, because, like, really, that's a uniform violation, really, but they've relaxed on the rules, because usually the what it really is the jerseys and stuff, especially professional ranks. Like, you're never going to see no stomachs in the professional ranks. Well, in the college, they kind of lax, and it depends on the school, because some schools not going to allow that, but that's more of an individual choice of the athlete, but, you know.
Well, I still watch 80s basketball, so I can see, see them rolling around 80s and early 90s. So
you're
I can,
about with the
you know, see them rolling around in their short shorts.
She like that John Stockton.
Oh, man, forget John.
Look at them men in them Daisy Duke Shaw.
But once again, though, that's sexuality versus over sexualization. It's okay to be sexual. That's very okay to be sexual, but it's not okay to be over sexualized to the point to where people can't control themselves and they are being sexually aggressive.
Agreed.
And suggestive and violent to people. You know that.
Yeah,
that,
tie that back in, because I was just wondering, how in the hell are we gonna tie all of this to rape culture?
Because I mean, it goes all of it goes back, because all of it is a part of what makes this culture what it is today, and the way we think, the way we walk, the way we talk, the way we interact with each other, even the way we interact with each other on the sexual level, like the conversation you have to have with young men about no. When a woman says no, don't matter how she say it, it's no, because growing up with us, that no was a yes. She said, stop.
But
she really means.
No.
Now, we don't care. Now, we're teaching young men, if she looked like she finna say an N-word, any N-word she say, if her name Nakia, you better stop. You know what I'm saying?
You know how Tammy knew exactly what the phrase was?
Uh-huh.
I remember last time we was talking, you were like, do women really do that?
Yes.
Tammy knew right away what the phrase was. When they say no like that, they mean keep going.
Why?
Right.
I do it with you?
No, you don't do it with me, because if you say stop to Patrick, stop. You will ruin a sexual encounter with me fucking around.
Yeah. Hey, you better not say your N or S word.
Hey, I'm trying to tell you, but I'll be
putting
my clothes, shoes, socks on. I'll be sitting in the car. You'll be wondering what the hell happened. You'll be in there taking a bath. Do I stink? Like, what the hell? Nah, you said no, so I'm getting out of the situation.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I agree. Yeah, the current atmosphere warrants that. And every young man should be, equipped with that type of information. But on the same level, I grew up in a space where it was like shameful if you did that you should not send mixed signals, because that could get somebody into, you know, a situation that neither one of you wanted to be in. So, you know, that's the idea, is that we hit it on that two-prong attack, where we don't have a message just for the young ladies, and we don't have a message just for the young men and the adults that are involved, but we got an overall community message or a code that we adhere to. And it is about, you know, having some self-composure or some decorum. You know, I'm not going to go around grabbing men's crotches and that kind of stuff. But if I see you and you look good, I'm a look, you know what I'm saying?
But once again, it's okay to look. If somebody look good, that's perfectly okay. It's you a grown woman. It's okay to express yourself in that manner. That's okay. Like, you can look at. Hey, I want people to look at me because I'm a looker. I look.
Goodness, Joseph, I would like to take a second to commend you on your maturity, as far as not feeling like it's appropriate, you know, with the little girls and stuff. Yeah, I appreciate that. Because them little
weird
girls be looking
it
like
is,
grown
it
women.
Is awkward.
That's just weird, man.
You know, as much as I say, hey,
I mean,
I
think the cheerleaders are there, are supposed to be there to cheer the team, and to get the crowd hype, since they face the crowd nowadays.
Yeah, but your most important asset is facing the other team.
I guess I never knew it to be that, but you know, but I do think that there's a level of maturity when you say, I mean, you want to walk in there with shades on and blinders because you don't want nothing in your peripheral. You know, that's inappropriate. So, but that's a level of maturity, and you know, you should give yourself a round of applause.
I appreciate that. I mean, but like I say, I've always felt like it was weird to be looking at young girls in a sexual manner. That's fucking weird. I don't understand that mindset or none of that. That's just weird. I want grown women. I want a grown woman. I'm a grown man. I need a grown woman. And for men or people, period, because we're starting to hear more and more stories of men starting to tell their stories about them being molested by older women and just adults, period, who get off on kids. Like, I saw a video earlier today, and I'm glad the dude was going off on it. Like, the little boy, it was a little boy's birthday party, and somebody mentioned this earlier, but the little boy birthday party, the lady, grown-ass woman with a big old booty, just bouncing her booty on the little boy and just letting him smack her on the ass, just smacking him. They, all them adults need their ass whooped. Oh, every last one of them need their ass whooped. That is not okay. They need their ass whooped. You can't be raising kids in no goddamn environments like that, man.
Oh, man, I agree.
I mean, but
yeah, but we got to get a grip on the culture, period, man.
Yeah.
We got to get a grip on the culture, period, because like you said, this is in the house. Now it's circling, you know, social media. Like, the shit is cute. You know, it's just like, you just got to get a grip. Like, it's not what it used to be.
Cute is becoming a derogatory word for me, because the shit that people are labeling cute is so not that. You know what I'm saying? Kids cursing. Oh, that's so cute. He just said,
nah, that's not cute.
What? You know, girls twerking. Got all these videos of these 4 and 5 year old girls twerking. She getting it, ain't her? She's her cute self. You know, like, up to the point now, I feel like if you call me cute, I should punch you in the face. You just insulted me some kind of way. Like, I don't.
Baby, you're so cute.
I don't like that word. And see, now if I punch you in the face and you call the cops, everybody gonna be like he was tripping, and I'm gonna be like, listen, officer, I had just said if you call me cute, I'm gonna punch you in the face. And what did she do?
He domestic.
She then became a typical black woman, want to press her man buttons and want to get him all worked up because she think it's cute when he get violent and start punching holes in the wall.
He crazy.
I know, right?
I
mean, do I need to like back up
joking
a little bit?
I'm joking. Everybody's joking.
No. Well, So where do we go from?
Monique's like, I don't know.
I'm joking.
Where do we go from here in terms of the, you know, even a code for young adults in terms of that, but also that double, recognizing that hypocrisy that exists between the genders and what's socially acceptable. I think it's because I was raised in an atmosphere where it was a put off for older women to prey on younger, men. I've been predispositioned to think that's disgusting myself. Like, I don't like younger, you know, younger guys. Even now, you know, I'm 44 years old and I can't go below 43, you know, to go out with somebody because I think, that's not cool. So where do we go from here in terms of helping people get to a space where they understand that it's not appropriate how we perpetuate a culture that could lead to sexual deviance?
I think we might have to have a show where we're not on tangents and on the sidelines so much, and where we're actually hitting the issue, because it's hard to have a conversation about rape culture if you never completely define what rape culture is and how it plays out. You know, we're talking about a culture that encourages and accepts behaviors that cultivate rape. And then
right.
you have to get into defining culture, which is potentially a show in and of itself. But I do think there are things we need to, like, we can all agree the socialization aspect needs to be done differently. I think women are inherently sexualized, which is why I honestly think even other women find women to be sexy. I think the culture is that pervasive and that deep where, you know, everybody finds women sexually appealing because we've all received some level of cultural conditioning to view women that way. And I'm not saying everybody is, like, all women are bisexual. I'm not saying that. Come on, let's be real. But I am saying, like, it is very.
I mean, you
frequent.
Don't gotta be bisexual to be like, oh, she, you know, she's fine.
Right,
mm-hmm.
But you know, you gotta draw those lines because people will take what you say and take it to an extreme. But I do think, you know, like you'll find a lot of women that'll be like, oh, she's sexy, she's fine, she's attractive. How many men will you find saying that about other men? Like, if a man say anything other than he's straight, every dude in the room look at him like he's gay.
Yeah.
Like that's the epitome of the compliment for a man. You know, what you think about him? Right. He's straight.
Man, yeah, all right.
You know?
He cool.
You can't
he
be
cool.
Like, you say he look good. Oh, you gay, bro.
Man, he cool. He cool.
So I think, like, that component on the behalf of women needs to be dialed back. The sexuality, the objectification, the place in the self-worth. Because it seems like a lot of women place their self-worth in their physical appearance, in their ability to garner sexual attention and things of that nature. That all needs to be pulled back. In terms of the men, I think self-control, I've always said I think self-control needs to be put forward more. We need to spend more time talking about and teaching self-control. Men need to be allowed to be more than one type of man. You know, so that means that there needs to be room made for the man that's not hyper-aggressive, for the man that's not just going to go out and take it, for the man that's not going to, you know, have all of these certain characteristics. Because when you begin to think about rape culture and manhood, like, a lot of the same things that makes a rapist is what makes an alpha male the dominant male that people want to
yeah.
be around and
the
be.
The characteristics
yeah.
are the same. That meant those man box characteristics are the
mm-hmm.
same.
So, you know, so, and then a dude that doesn't have those characteristics, instead of saying, you know what, you a good dude because you don't have rapist tendencies, we'd be like, oh, you're soft. You're feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You're effeminate. So I think, like, there are just so many different things that need to be changed. Like, that I honestly think that might need to be another show where we just, we don't beat around rape culture like we kind of did with this show. We actually just dive right into it and just talk about that specifically. None of the tangents, none of the sidebars, just that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good.
Now, well, yeah. We'll do that. But you know, I did one of the things is for this one, kind of getting the woman's perspective on the rape culture. In conjunction with last week's show. So last week's show do kind of help put context on the culture of rape. Then this week kind of being able to get more than just my point of view, but other people's point of view about the culture of rape. So, but definitely this is something we want to come back to and talk about more and kind of delve more in and be more specific with certain things that we want to talk about. But definitely want to be able to keep the conversation going. Keep people really understanding that we all have been cultured to be a part of this rape culture, so it's going to take all of us to stop it. But we can't just keep acting like men are the only ones who are the perpetrators in this rape culture. And that's one of the things that really get me when we only focus on the men. Like this one last point I want to make. Like, I was at some kind of, I forgot what exactly what it was, but it was an event, and it was a sexual violence prevention, like domestic violence prevention training, and having a conversation with this lady. And this lady looked at me and was like, all men are useless. All men are useless. All men are useless. And it's like, but you keep having that mindset and nothing is going to ever change. I understand you might be angry and all these things and things that happen to you, but you keep with that mindset and nothing is going to change. You're not helping your daughters and your fellow women live in a safer world with a mindset like that, because once again, people have to get out of their feelings and start getting to the reality of what's going on. And you may be angry that this happened to you, but it's not everybody across the board, because you know it. You in other aspects you don't make the broad stroke, but in this one, because of the I guess how personal of the feelings it is. But if we really want to make a change and change this culture of rape, this culture of domestic violence and all these things that we have in America, we got to be damn serious about it. And we have to be able to look at it from an objective point of view from both sides and make the best plans moving forward to deal with this culture of rape. Or like I keep saying, 50, 60, 70, 80 years from now, we're going to be back here talking about the same thing once again.
Right. Agreed.
Anybody want to hit the listeners with some parting shots? Y'all tell them about your show again. Tell them about your show again, ladies.
Okay, I can take that away. You got it, Tim, or you want me to take it?
You got it,
Mom. Okay. You said I got it?
Yeah,
you got it.
I got it, yeah.
Mo knows. So, hashtag Mo knows.
Yeah, remember that.
First of all, I just want to say what a pleasure it was to join the show today and talk about this topic. It is important. And at least we get a couple of the nuances out of the way, where sometimes it's even hard for men and women to even come to the table and have these conversations because of how different our viewpoints are built up to be. And I want to remind everybody that when we start talking about the community in itself and in respect to the Black community, because I'm a Black woman, that oftentimes we center the conversation around the relationship between the Black man and the Black woman as one, lovers. But we forget about all the other relationships that we have in place that precede, that come before that relationship can even develop and start, which is your relationship with your father, mother, brothers,
right,
uncles, aunts, cousins, those kind of things. So when we have conversations in the future about the relationship between a Black man and a Black woman, it's not just going to be from the standpoint of marriage or a husband or
right,
a life mate or commitment, but it's going to be from the standpoint of all your relationships, because you need those relationships to be healthy in order to have a good, healthy relationship with anyone else or your partner. But that's kind of some of the things that you're going to get to have a listen to on Black Tea Time and Women Talk. That is some of the things that, from a varying standpoint of views, we're all from different backgrounds. We are all dedicated to having the purpose of seeing Black women sit down, speak with each other, not have to
right,
agree on every topic, but still
right,
have a debate or discussion about it where it leads to progress. And that's something that we want to put out there in the forefront, and we hope that everybody likes it. We're going to definitely tackle some of the hard subjects and catch us out there, freedomtrainradio.com.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Freedom Train Radio.
I got it this time.
Mo did it right. She's the first person to get it right off the bat.
Off top. Yeah, Mo, yeah, you special. You special.
That's what they tell me.
It's
I'm trying to get
good.
A check for that.
Hey. Everybody remember, every Monday you get the Fix Sports Podcast. Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tolba is moving to Wednesday, so stay tuned so we can have the exact time. But it may be around the same time, 8:30 or 9:30. But for right now, we know they're moving to Wednesdays. On the Wednesday, the Freedom Train podcast come out, so you can also get Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. Thursday, get Lessons from the Screen with Patrick Irvin, where he breaks down documentaries, movies, all types of things. Lessons from the Screen. I said it right. Don't be trying to mess me up. And then, if you're on iTunes or Google Play and Stitcher, remember we're on Stitcher now, you're going to get all the episodes Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You're going to get all the episodes that come from the Freedom Train Network. And when the Tea Time Black Women Talk, when they drop, you're going to get that too. So, ladies, definitely appreciate y'all stepping on the show, stepping on the train today. Pat, you already know how we get down. Hey, man, you already know. It's all good. This is the Freedom Train Network, y'all, the family. So, I just want to let everybody know, huh?
I see what you did there. Her nickname is Miss Drop It Like It's Hot, and you said that they're going to drop it.
Okay, you the only one got that. Okay, he's stretching.
I got one every show. I ain't had one yet.
He's stretching.
Nah, because the show was getting ready to close. I got to have one every show, and I ain't had one yet, so I had to.
That's the seventh in the stretch, huh?
Yeah.
It is. Well, hey, man. Hey, black people, we love y'all. Stay black, stay powerful, stay proud, stay beautiful, love yourselves. And if you don't, learn to love yourselves. Peace.